Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. The Cape Cod Canal bridges were built simultaneously and opened to traffic in June of 1935. 90 years later, they are reaching the end of their service life and plans are underway to replace them, spearheaded by the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. Today, we talk bridge replacement, where we stand with the design, construction, timeline, and funding. And joining us in studio is Louisa Pajawanski. She's the Executive Director of the Mass DOT Mega Projects Delivery Office. Hi, Louisa.
Good morning.
Stephen Tupper is the Deputy Director at the Cape Cod Commission. Hi, Stephen.
Good morning, Mindy.
Chris Pawicki is Chair of the Executive Committee of the Sierra Club's Cape Cod and Islands Group.
Hi, Chris. Good morning.
And Paul Nitzwicki is Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce CEO. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mindy.
All right, let's bring everybody up to speed on where we are in the process of replacing the bridges, because there might be some listeners out there who haven't been paying close attention as the rest of us have. So, Louisa, where will the new bridges be located in relation to the current bridges?
We're going to start with the Sagamore Bridge and then follow with Bourne. And each bridge will be located on the inboard side. So on Sagamore, it will be directly to the west. And Bourne, it will be directly to the east.
Yeah. And so why were these locations chosen?
They were selected after extensive study by the Army Corps of Engineers, which owns the bridges. We looked at a variety of different alignments, how they would connect to the regional network. Also impacts both to the environment and to private properties.
Right. And there are people who will be losing their homes near the Sagamore Bridge. Can you talk about what's next for those folks?
We have notified the homeowners in the Round Hill neighborhood and another location nearby. We're currently in the appraisal process. They are entitled to just compensation under the Constitution. And we will go through three separate appraisals to make sure that they get everything that they're entitled to for their properties, their homes, and the land, and will also support the relocation to a new place for them.
Always so tough, right, when you have to have a relocation like that. Give us some more details on the size and lane configuration for the bridges and what's being proposed.
Well, the existing bridges are very large. The new bridges will be even larger. One of the constraints and problems with the current bridges is that they have very narrow 10-foot lanes, very limited sidewalks, not great bicycle accommodation. The new bridges will be significantly wider. We'll have 12-foot lanes. We'll have an auxiliary lane to address some of the traffic congestion that results from substandard interchanges. So we'll have more space for drivers. That means when there's an incident, for example, a breakdown, there'll be a place for them to go and they won't back up traffic for miles. That's not only good for traffic, it's good for the environment. And we'll have a 14-foot wide shared use path for bicyclists and pedestrians to walk over, in addition to a lookout area so that people can stop and appreciate the beautiful Cape Cod Canal.
I didn't realize about the lookout area.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. So does the lane configuration have anything to do with funding? You know, for example, does there need to be, you know, bike or pedestrian lane to qualify for any kind of state or federal funding?
The funding that we've received is a combination of federal grant funding, bridge investment, which is essentially replacing large aging bridge infrastructure, as well as the Commonwealth contribution of $750 million. There are not restrictions. We're making it a multimodal crossing for trucks, cars, bicyclists, and pedestrians because we're a transportation agency and we think it's the right thing to do, not because we're required by funding.
Right. Stephen, I know you're always looking out for those bike lanes, right? I mean, that's a key thing. A lot of bikers are thinking I can't imagine taking a bike over the bridges now.
Absolutely. We want to be thinking about all road users in this situation. So certainly the accommodation on the bridges and the connections to the community are really important for bicyclists, pedestrians, and also thinking about transit users. So glad to see some great improvements for regional travel and also address some of the real challenges that we've been seeing within the town of Bourne specifically.
Yeah. Louisa, where is this lookout spot going to be that you can look out?
It will be along the shared use path. So as people are bicycling or walking across the bridge, they can stop and look over the canal. Uh-huh. And we have renderings on our website, so we encourage people to go take a look.
Yeah. And are there still opportunities to change the size or lane configuration of the bridges, or is that sort of set in stone at this point?
One of the big milestones we hit just recently was the submittal of a preliminary design, which sets the parameters of the bridge. So there may be slight alterations here and there, but we largely know the bridge alignment, where the impacts are, and the recently filed environmental documents describes in great detail what those impacts are.
Right. Let's talk about the environmental impact. How is the impact of the bridges being assessed?
We are required by the state and by the federal government to produce very extensive, detailed documents, one of which we just submitted to the state, the Environmental Impact Report. And it covers a broad array of impacts, everything from air and noise to endangered species to community impacts and right-of-way impacts. We will get our draft back with a certificate on October 31st and then complete the final by spring. And then we'll have a similar process for the federal environmental review. So they're very thick, very detailed documents, and they're worth it. You know, Cape Cod has a lot to protect, a lot of natural resources to protect, and we want to make sure that the infrastructure that is so critical to the region doesn't have any undue negative impacts.
Has there been any surprises that in the environmental impact that you were surprised at?
I am surprised that such massive structures have a relatively light environmental footprint and impact. We've done a lot of work over the past few years to make sure that any impacts we have are mitigated. We have 9 miles of bike paths that will be included in the bridge. We're thinking very broadly about impact and how we can make it better for people on Cape Cod.
Anybody want to add anything to what Luis is saying? The rest of you guys are kind of quiet.
I guess I would say that from Sierra Club's perspective, looking at the environmental impacts is really important. The base document is about 1,000 pages long, 3.5 inches tall. You wouldn't want to be hit with it. And then there's the appendices. So there's a lot in there in the study. In general, Sierra Club is certainly concerned about the dislocation of residents, especially looking at along the scenic highway near the Bourne Bridge, where there will be a lot of displacement as well as construction disruption. So we're concerned about that. There are always wetlands impacts with a project of this scale, concerns about infringing on protected species. I think that, overall, we're pretty confident that those issues are going to be addressed through this rigorous process. Our biggest concern is looking at what are the downcape impacts of having expanded canal crossings. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that.
Yeah, definitely
talk
about that. So what happens with this? Who's evaluating the findings of this assessment?
This document that we just submitted is being evaluated by the Massachusetts Environmental Policy Act Office.
Okay. Does the public have an opportunity to weigh in on the assessment?
Yes, absolutely. And we encourage comments. We just had a big open house last week. We had a couple of hundred people come and we walked them through. We had displays of each of the chapters of the document. So we really encourage people to take a look at the document, consider the impacts, and feel free to send us their comments.
What was at the open house? What was the general consensus of people coming through?
I think people were curious as to when this was going to happen. Was it really going to happen? And we had a lot of people with very specific interests in air, noise, endangered species. In the center of the room, we had a big project display about what's coming up next. But along the perimeter, we had very specific displays about impacts. And it's notable how interested people on Cape Cod are in this impact. They really cherish the environmental resources that they have here, and they wanted to know, where are we going to protect them?
Yeah. Paul, you're at the chamber. I'm sure you're hearing from people about this on lots of different
We've been hearing for quite some time, and my predecessor at the chamber, Wendy Northcross, was really a champion of replacing the bridges, and it's taken a couple of decades to really to work out the relationship between the Army Corps and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and what was going to happen, how that was going to happen. So what we've done at the Chamber is we've actually put together a group of 50 businesses and community representatives in a group that we refer to as the Cape and Islands Bridge Coalition. And so we meet quarterly to discuss the process to work with stakeholders in the state.
Mm-hmm. So another question that comes up a lot is about a third bridge. Right. So currently traffic coming from West I-95 and North Route 495, Route 25, they want go down Cape. They have to travel, along the canal. And this has caused traffic backups, right, on both the Bourne Bridge and the canal roads. And a while ago, folks were wondering if a third bridge along the center of the canal could solve that problem by connecting Route 25 directly to Route 6 on the Cape and then cut out the Bourne and Sagamore bridges entirely. Looking at an aerial view, a bridge in the middle of the canal does make sense, it seems, right? So wondering how seriously was that evaluated, and if it was, why was it taken off the table?
It was evaluated in the 2020 report from the Corps of Engineers and certified by MassDOT. We looked at a lot of different options, including a tunnel. Some had suggested filling in the canal and running a road over it, and a third bridge. And while we see why it looks like a simple connection, it also would have very significant environmental impacts as well as right-of-way impacts. So I completely agree with Chris that we should minimize the impact, especially when it involves where people are living, to the extent we can. And that option just would have had too many impacts to justify its construction.
Yeah, no, the third bridge, from our perspective, very expensive, a lot of added expense, huge environmental impacts on the community. And then you've got a DCPC on the north side, and you've got Joint Base Cape Cod on the south side.
Yeah. So, for people who don't know what a DCPC is, tell them what
it's a district of critical planning concern. It's one of the tools that the Cape Cod Commission has to protect open space, and there's a significant district of critical planning concern that's been identified and born on the north side.
I would imagine, too, there'd be a lot more properties you'd have to take by eminent domain, right?
Yes.
Was that something that was looked at as well?
Yes.
Yeah. So those folks are going, phew. Okay, go ahead, Steve, then we'll go to Chris.
Another thing I think is worth noting is a lot of that issue that we see of travel along the canal is really to do with the four approaches to the bridges. So it's not just the replacement of the bridges, but replacing the bore and rotary will take care of a lot of those issues that we see now in terms of making that travel along the canal, where the third bridge would have been one solution. Addressing the approaches is really a more sensitive way to do that.
I love the way the new lanes come into the bore and rotary, where if you want to go down the canal, there's that right lane goes right. Boy, does that is so much better than what it was before. As long as everybody's paying attention to what lane they're supposed to be in, right? Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there is a third bridge already, and it's the railroad bridge. Oh. And one of the things that Sierra Club is very interested in is making sure that we're not just creating new bridges, but we're creating a transportation system for the 21st century. The bridge is 90 years old this year, really set the framework for growth and development across the Cape, out to the islands for the 20th century. And so we need a 21st century network. And that means that in this process, the bridges address in a big way pedestrian and bike path issues. And that's a huge step forward. We're also interested in mitigation to get people and trucks and vehicles off the bridges. And so that third bridge, there's a need for investment in that rail connection.
What would you like to see happen on that rail bridge?
Well, I think the first thing is to get commuter rail active and operating into Bourne. That's the first step towards perhaps bringing commuter rail across the Cape. And ultimately, you know, when you look at a large scale transportation project like this, typically any expansion of infrastructure, improvement of interconnections is going to lead to more travel, more through travel. And so, we're considering how are people going to get to Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket, Chatham, Provincetown, Falmouth, all the way across the Cape. And this project, if it's going to unleash sort of new traffic forces, we need to be planning to address that. And commuter rail could address that. We could also look at getting truck traffic out of Woods Hole. I know people in Woods Hole would be really happy with that. Anything we can do to get vehicles off these new roadways will also be a benefit to the region. Mm-hmm.
And just to build on that, certainly we want to look at all modes of transportation. We've seen great success with services like the Cape Flyer, really good at bringing people down to the Cape. We want to think about access both ways. So this is the time to have those conversations. Some of these things are beyond what can be done in the scope of this project, but we have MassDOT at the table. We have the Army Corps at the table. So this is the time to think about those big picture transportation decisions.
What kind of shape is that bridge in, the railroad bridge? Does it need some work, or is it in pretty good shape?
I will start off by saying I'm not a bridge engineer, but what the Army Corps has said is that bridge was done more recently than the Bourne and Sagamore bridges in terms of a rehab, so it is capable of handling the traffic that it sees today. We do need to think about the long term if we're going to have increased service over that bridge, but certainly it is an efficient way to move people.
Cape Flyer has been a real good example of what can happen. I mean, you bring it in and then you get into Hyannis and the buses are kind of, everything's coordinated, right? So you can get on the bus, you can get on the ferry. That's been a real success, right?
It has been, yeah. A testament to Tom Cahir,
yeah,
who recently passed away. But that connection works. But the Cape's been conflicted for decades on rail because you have so many communities that are pulling up the rails to put in bike paths. And yet you have so many people that really want to push commuter rail. And really the status of the rails on the Cape side, you know, they would need to be upgraded significantly in order to achieve a speed that would be conducive to commuter rail. And you get a lot of pushback from the people that live near the rail track, especially on the north side.
Yeah. And I imagine it'd be very costly.
It would be costly.
Yeah. We're talking about replacing the bridges. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. You can also send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about the replacement of the Bourne and Sagamore bridges, where we stand with the design, construction, timeline, and funding. With us is Louisa Pajawanski. She's the Executive Director of MassDOT Mega Projects Delivery Office. Stephen Tupper, Deputy Director at the Cape Cod Commission. Chris Pawicki, Chair of the Executive Committee of the Sierra Club's Cape and Islands Group. And Paul Nitzwicki, Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce CEO. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, let's talk about traffic for a moment. And just a little bit of trivia here. The very first Point program we did 24 years ago was on traffic. And here we are still talking about traffic. And I think it's even worse. All right, so the bridge traffic is an everyday occurrence, not just a summertime weekend issue anymore. We now have a morning and afternoon backup at the bridges as more folks are commuting on the Cape to work and off the Cape to go home. This is a big change, even from like, what, 5 years ago, right, Paul? I mean, what we're seeing. So let's talk about what role might the bridges play? Maybe this is a question for you, Stephen, this new bridges. How will this impact traffic?
Sure. I think that's a really important question, one that maybe we need to zoom out a little bit to get the context for. So certainly roadway infrastructure projects do not directly create traffic, but what they can do is influence development patterns. So that's what we really want to keep an eye on. And if you think about some of the worst examples of this would be in California and Texas, where there's unconstrained systems. They build new highways from an urban area out to suburban area. You see a lot of new development filling in that highway and really ineffective. So we certainly don't want to see a focus on any new capacity addition across the Cape. That being said, we're different in many ways than some place like Texas or California. We are not an unconstrained system. There are many constraints to development on the Cape, some of them natural and some of them have to do with our regulations. So in terms of thinking about what these bridges are going to do, I think we have to think about it holistically and what are the controls in place to make sure we protect the natural resources and protect the things we care about in this region.
Yeah. Anybody want to add? Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think that down Cape issues are really important about this project. You know, the congestion is obviously around, there's a lot of congestion around the bridges, but, you know, a Saturday morning, the congestion stretches all the way across the Cape. And with expanded carrying capacity and, you know, the idea that the, you know, the new bridges are going to really enhance the popularity of the Cape as a travel destination, which is one of the conclusions of the Cape Cod Chamber, we do need to be concerned about those interchanges down Cape and what's going to do, what's going to sort of be created in terms of congestion. And are there ways we can, again, move people down Cape in different ways than we are right now? We have a ferry system that runs from Provincetown to Boston. You know, we may need to look at increased ferry transport from our mainland. So New Bedford, get the trucks off the roadways. You know, that should be something that's really discussed seriously. We may also want to look at having a ferry system that starts in Plymouth and brings people to the Outer Cape for daily visits, something like that, that again gets people out of cars, out off the roadways, but still gets them to the Cape that they want to enjoy. And so we need to look at not just the growth and development controls down Cape, but also what's going to happen with congestion? Where are the cars going to go? What sort of pressures are going to be created for new development, new commercial development, new residential development? When people have an easier ability to cross the bridges, that sort of fear of being stuck on one side of another goes away. And I think there's going to be pressures on residential development, commercial development. So we need to plan for that. And the Cape Cod Commission really has an important role to play in that.
Do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the bridges need to be replaced primarily because they are literally a bottleneck. So the approaches on either side of either bridge actually can handle a lot more traffic capacity than the bridges themselves. So it will ease the traffic, and that's really what we're looking for, safer better traffic management, and the newer structures will allow us to manage the traffic easier. But the reconfiguration of the approaches is as important mm-hmm. as the bridges themselves. I mean, the traffic onto the Cape is pretty evenly split across Bourne and Sagamore. Traffic off the Cape is heavier on Sagamore. And that exit one ramp that by the former Christmas tree shop that comes in, it feels like you're merging eight lanes into one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what causes a lot of that backup of people leaving the Cape. But 27% of the workforce on the Cape crosses the bridges every day. So it is becoming a more of a commuter issue, but it's not like a larger urban city where you're making roadway improvements. And so people are then making a choice not to take available public transportation and to drive instead. And that really sort of drives a lot of the induced traffic situations we see across the country. That's not the situation here.
Yeah. Let's talk to Meg, who's giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Meg.
Hi. As someone who goes up over the bridge, over the Sagamore Bridge every week, I don't consider myself a visitor. And it seems like a lot of the talk is about the visitors to the Cape, the visitors to the Cape. Well, what about the regular commuters that are living on the Cape? I wish this gentleman just mentioned that. It would be mentioned more often because there's a lot of us that live on the Cape and we go back and forth on a regular basis. And mentioning so much about the visitors, and seems like it's all about, well, it's not all about, many of it seems to be about the money that's going to the different towns down the Cape. And that's why we need to, these are old bridges. We know they need to be replaced. But you know what? Mention all the people that use them on a regular basis, not just the people who are visiting.
Right.
It's important.
Got it. All right. Okay. Thank you, Meg. Yeah, and you mentioned 27%
of the workforce. Yeah, but I will say, I mean, the Cape's economy really is travel and tourism, and you can't really get away from that. In 2024, the Cape did $2.9 billion in visitor spend, and almost half of all the money spent on local businesses between November and May is spent by visitors.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an opportunity with the new bridges to be more considerate of the communities around there, to relieve congestion in Bourne and Sandwich, for example, and to help those communities get to and from the Cape more easily.
Yeah, I completely agree that we need to balance the needs of the visitors who come in the tens of millions, 38 million trips a year. But I also agree that it's important to recognize the role of the bridges for the year-round residents of Cape Cod. They really are a lifeline. That's the word I hear most frequently from Cape Codders about the importance of the bridge. It's the only evacuation route by road from Cape and Islands to the mainland. And as pointed out by Paul, thousands of workers cross the bridge in both directions every day. Mm-hmm. So we recognize that the importance of the bridge to Cape Codders is really what's driving us forward, while recognizing that the bridges carry so much traffic that it has an impact on the statewide economy as well as Cape Cod economy.
I think this came into really sharp focus last time the Army Corps did maintenance work on the bridge in 2023. It was an off-season maintenance work, but we saw traffic more so than even than that summer. It was really the impact on those workers going back and forth, the people that are running businesses on the Cape. And we have specific instances of people deciding no longer to be employed on the Cape or go each direction because of the maintenance impacts there. So really, this is a reliability and maintenance project, and it is critical to the year-round residents of the Cape and the Islands.
Yeah. I'm just going to mention emergency evacuation. Can we really get every? I mean, that seems like such a joke to say that we could get everybody off. You'd have to start a week in advance, wouldn't you?
Well, that's another benefit of the additional capacity.
So
that
we would
the new
be able to what, make
provide.
Them go one way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the new bridges are going to give us a lot more flexibility. I mean, the old bridge is there now, especially as it relates to sort of year-round residents. The economy and the travel and tourism industry grew up around it. We have a chance to get it right, to do it better. With the new mm-hmm. bridge construction, I think part of the evacuation route is part of that as well. I mean, the ability to have wider bridges means you can get more people off, and have two spans next to each other that potentially could go one way really increases the ability to do that.
Yeah. Right. Stephen in Chatham writes, be careful what you wish for because you might get it. Replacing the bridges over the Cape Cod Canal will have a significant effect on the entire region, not just the areas surrounding the bridges in Bourne. opening up the bottlenecks at the bridges will ease traffic congestion by increasing traffic flow. However, the draft environmental impact report says that there will not be significant increase in traffic during peak periods. That seems counterintuitive. What is the logic and science behind that?
It's true that our environmental report and our traffic analysis shows that there will not be big spikes in traffic use of the bridges, and that's because it's a much more complex interaction between infrastructure, land use, which is very thoughtfully and well managed by the Cape Cod Commission and the towns on the Cape. We don't see major increases in traffic. We see more efficient throughput of traffic and safer throughput of traffic, as well as a more multimodal approach to the bridges where we're serving the travel needs of bicyclists and pedestrians as well.
I think the other important thing to note is this is not being designed to eliminate all congestion around the canals. There will still be backups in the summer. It's really to have that reliability for the year-round residents, but it's not going to result in an entirely free-flow situation. So the goal is reliability and safety here, and it would be designed differently if it was for throughput as the primary goal.
Yeah, and I think that the environmental impact statement does a great job of looking at and addressing issues in the immediate area of the project. But there's a socioeconomic appendix, and it suggests that by 2050, relative to no change or no new bridges, only 21 new jobs will be created with having expanded and improved and more and safer and more flexible and versatile bridge crossings. And we feel like at Sierra Club that's an underestimate of how there will be a ripple effect across the Cape. And so, 21 jobs is not much. If it's going to be a popular project with tourists to have the ability to get on and off the Cape easily, if it's going to be popular with workers and commuters and businesses to get people back and forth across the bridge, that number just seems relatively low, and I just don't think it's believable. And I think we need to look to the Cape Cod Commission as the entity that will be reviewing the project once it goes through federal and state reviews to conduct a detailed study of possible down Cape impacts, and so that it can help the towns prepare and have plans in place for, 10 years out when cars start coming across the bridge. We need to be very proactive in getting ahead of that. And if we think that it's not necessary to, plan all the way to Provincetown and out to the islands, I think that's a mistake. And so Sierra Club has urged the Cape Cod Commission to conduct a detailed study of those issues.
And certainly I can't agree anymore that we really do need to think about the entire Cape here. Certainly Cape Cod Commission staff are digging into the environmental reports right now, and we'll be submitting a comment letter as we had with each of the environmental reviews along the way. And really it does take a complex look at it to understand the interactions there. Happy to dig into it a little more as it go through, but there's other factors involved in terms of our overall demographics detailed in the report. So this isn't the singular impact in terms of the way the region will develop. So we do have to think about all those things together.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk to Pamela, giving us a call from Vineyard Haven. Hi, Pamela.
Hi. This is just a bit of nostalgia. As a child, we took the train from Stamford, Connecticut to Woods Hole. And I just wish those days were back. Obviously, that can't happen anymore. But I hope there really is a push for rail, because it's just so convenient. And now that I'm a full-time Vineyarder, I miss it even more, being able to scoot down to New York and point south. But I'm thrilled about the new bridges. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for the call. Yeah, boy, that would be. You have to go to Providence now to get the train to New York, right? All right, Ann is giving us a call from Mashpee. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm well. I'm sorry. I tuned in late, so maybe this was brought up, but a couple of points. One, I'm wondering, when you talk about maybe making it easier and even having ferry transportation or whatever to bring more folks onto the Cape, I'm worried about the degradation of some of our water sources, of the bays that in the area. I know in Mashpee, Falmouth, Wacoit Bay is almost dead with algae mats and things like that. And so I'm wondering if there was any consideration to maybe having tolls. And I understand that there are people who use it for their their work and all that, and if there could be special transponders for people, residents or business people who live on the Cape, but that some of the visitors that come and enjoy our natural resources maybe find a way to contribute to it. I even know around Waquake Bay, many of the people who have summer homes on the bay are not boaters, and so the they pay some taxes, but it's different. And so I'm wondering if that could be a financial resource to help. Yeah. And if you are talking about more ferries and all of that, the other piece of public transportation seems to me is to have a better bus system, because you can dump people from Falmouth to Plymouth, or you can dump people, you know, in Falmouth or in P-Town. But if they're going to feel like they can't get anywhere because there's not really good bus system here.
And let's let them respond to some of your thoughts here. Thanks for the question. What about tolls? That's a question that's come up a lot.
Yes, I'm glad funding has come up because it's been a hot topic at our public meetings. Governor Healey has spoken to the issue. We're not contemplating tolls on the bridges. However, the administration, the Healey Driscoll administration, has really put their money where their mouth is. These are federally owned structures, and the Commonwealth is contributing $750 million for the Sagamore Bridge alone, and offered to match a $1.2 billion grant if we should receive it from USDOT for Bourne Bridge. So the funding is there for Sagamore. Not contemplating tolls, but I think one of the benefits of this arrangement between the state and federal governments, the benefits for the federal government is that we're willing to invest a lot of Commonwealth funds into replacing this bridge and then offering to take it off their hands, make them state-owned structures at the end of this.
And if I can just respond to the second half of that comment about bus transportation and connectivity, certainly that's a really important point. Right now, when the Cape Flyer stops at Buzzards Bay, there's a bus to bring people down to the Steamship Authority in Woods Hole. When it stops in Hyannis, there's Cape Cod RTA buses to bring them to other destinations. We do want to make sure that this plan and overall long-term planning thinks about that connectivity.
Yeah, I mean, I do think people have to keep in mind, we're very concerned about, you know, the environmental impacts on the Cape and increased traffic, but a lot of that is due to sort of changes that have happened in the economy already. I mean, we are a second homeowner economy. We're not a resort economy. There's a big difference there. So 37% of the homes on the Cape are second homes. At this point, 12% of them are used as short-term rentals. I mean, 42% of the short-term rentals in the state are on Cape Cod. And when you look at where those people are staying and the environmental impacts and degradation of water quality, there are other issues we really need to be paying attention to, in addition to the bridges, which I think can actually help improve the way that we deal with those problems.
And you think about second homeowners, right? Mom comes down maybe with some kids a car, then dad comes down with a car, the teenagers come down with a car, right? I mean, that's got a big impact as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're talking about replacing the bridges. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about replacing the Bourne and Sagamore bridges and where we stand with design, construction, timeline, and funding. With us is Louisa Pajawanski. She's Executive Director of the Mass DOT Mega Projects Delivery Office. Stephen Tupper is Deputy Director at the Cape Cod Commission. Chris Perwicki is Chair of the Executive Committee of the Sierra Club's Cape Cod and Islands Group. And Paul Nitzwicki is Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce CEO. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Dan is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. This question is maybe 5 years too late, but I've always wondered why it seems like tunnels were not given much consideration. We learned the hard way in Hurricane Bob that those bridges can't operate in hurricane conditions. A tunnel works just fine in hurricanes, in ice storms, in snowstorms. And then they're widely used in other parts of the world. I'm just wondering why that doesn't seem to be on the table here. Thank you.
Okay, Dan, thanks for the call.
Yes, it was considered extensively as part of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers report. A couple of challenges with the tunnels. One is they would cost about twice as much as the bridges do, and the bridges are $4.5 billion combined. The other issue is that they don't really address a multimodal crossing. They don't. You can't put bikes or pedestrians in the tunnel. It really wouldn't be able to address the significant traffic congestion issues. And you would have to start the approach to the tunnels so far back that they would have major environmental and right-of-way impacts as well. So they were considered, given a good hard look by our engineers, and determined to be not feasible, especially when there was a replacement bridge option on the table.
Yeah, good.
There is one actual underground component of this project that's important. It's second. It's parallel. It's not actually part addressed under the environmental impact statement for the bridges program, but currently there are two gas pipelines that run under the Bourne and the Sagamore, and those are going to be combined into a single pipeline that runs underneath the canal. And one of the things that Sierra Club is concerned about with that project is that the pipeline developer, Algonquin, has proposed to significantly expand the capacity of pipeline infrastructure onto the Cape. And so, looking at that part of the environmental impacts of this project is also important. The state MEPA office did its review of the Algonquin's application and said, hey, it looks like there's going to be an expansion here. You haven't justified an expansion. We need more information on that. And I think that, the pipeline expansion, the issues all the way out to Provincetown and Chatham that we've been discussing, and then sort of the localized impacts highlight how important this overall mega project is to the future of Cape Cod and to its direction on growth, development, climate mitigation. And so I think there needs to be more conversation and more awareness that the bridges project doesn't just bring new bridges, but it also involves this pipeline expansion that's proposed.
And Dan's question, he brought up the hurricanes. We get certain, winds get to a certain point, they have to close the bridges. Will these new bridges be the same? Will it be the same standard, or is it something different?
Much sturdier and brought up to modern design standards, so much more equipped to withstand extreme weather.
Right. Mike is giving us a call from Orleans. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I have a question. Has it ever been considered not to replace the bridges, but to just fill in the canal, that part of it? Because I was wondering, how much is the canal used for in terms of ships that go through it? And in modern day, going around the Cape is not like going by in a sailboat. And it's not that short a distance. And for $4.5 billion, they could... I'm just wondering whether that's ever been considered.
It has. Okay. Well, that's something that was also suggested.
It was also considered in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers report. Major issues involved with filling in the canal. We understand the suggestion. It seems like a straightforward approach, but it would have very significant environmental impacts, including on endangered species. It would... the recreational and freight traffic, maritime traffic would have to go around. It is not nearly as safe as going through the canal. The canal was built for a reason, and filling it in was determined not to be feasible because of the major impacts it would have. It would also not connect to the interchanges that we have there, so it would mean much more right-of-way impacts and much more construction cost in the end.
Barb and Dennis writes, I'm late to the conversation, but always want to ask about the speed limit. It's proposed to be 60 miles per hour, but nothing on the Cape is higher than 55. Plus, you have traffic merging on and off the bridges. Wouldn't 55 be better?
That's a great comment to consider as part of the environmental process, and we will take it into account. It's true that the traffic conditions themselves govern the speeds that people actually travel at. So on a summer day heading into the weekend, it's very unlikely that would happen, but appreciate the comment.
Yeah. What's the current timeline for the replacements? We're working on the Sagamore first, right? So what's the timeline?
We are moving at a pretty good clip. As I mentioned earlier, we just hit a major project milestone with filing of the state environmental documents. We expect state and federal environmental approvals to be completed along with permits by the third quarter of 2026. Then we will start the procurement phase. This is a big milestone in and of itself because what we're procuring is a team of designers and contractors who will complete the design and then build the new bridge. We expect to issue a notice to proceed, which tells the team to start work in late 27, very early 28.
And is it built on site, or is it something that's done remotely and brought here? How does that work?
Portions of it will be built off-site. The center arch span will be built off-site and be brought in by barge. That will save quite a bit of time. But a lot of the work will take place on land, including the interchanges and construction of the approach spans.
What about the rehab and maintenance work that they do on the bridges now? Sagamore construction is still a couple years away, yet the Army Corps report from 2020 said the Sagamore was due for a major rehab in 2025. Is that a safety problem? You know, Bourne is due in 2029. What about those projects?
We are very confident in our partners at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. They pay a lot of attention to both bridges as the owners and operators. We work very closely with them, and they coordinate with us on the traffic impacts, for example, of maintenance. So the bridges are inspected regularly. They do a really good job of keeping them in a good enough condition to give us time to complete the design and start construction.
Yeah, the real concern about rehabilitation from our perspective, from the perspective of the chamber, though, is it would require a complete closure of one of the bridges for up to 6 months. The Cape Cod Commission has done an economic impact study that's taken a look at that. It would also be a three-year project that would involve single lane restrictions. We would lose a third of our economy.
Sounds like a nightmare.
So, I mean, that's a non-starter. We have to avoid a rehabilitation at all costs.
Yeah. Stephen, what about, trying to mitigate the impact of traffic for residents, in Bourne, Sandwich, in the Sagamore area? What are we looking at as far as once the bridges are up? Are you going to change some of the roadways that lead to and from the bridges as well? Or what's the plan there?
Certainly, that's part of the project, is to think about the connections to the local communities on both sides of the bridges. So you'll see a number of improvements. Some of them are directly tied to the changing of the bridge, and some of them are just taking the opportunity to address some of the challenges we see today. For example, at the Sagamore Crossing, there's going to be new local connections with a road going under the new Sagamore Bridge, connecting up communities to some of the retail locations that have really been disconnected historically. So really reconnecting some of the communities and making overall improvements to connectivity locally.
Yeah, Lisa, what's the you talked about cost, but what's the current cost estimates for each bridge, and where do we stand in that funding?
Well, we have full funding for Sagamore, which is
so about, that's all set.
Yeah, about $2.3 billion. We have it's a combination of state and federal funds. We have applied for a grant for Bourne Bridge. We applied in August, and we have not yet heard back on the status.
It always seems like when you have a project that's far, the cost kind of goes up and up, right? So what we're estimating now may not be what it actually will cost, right?
Well, yeah, I appreciate that question, because we do periodic cost schedule and risk reviews, and we are just launching one right now. We use project controls. We pay a lot of attention to, for example, requests for additional scope items. We measure that against the available budget. We are very focused on delivering this project within its budget.
Yeah. So currently, the Army Corps of Engineers manages the bridges. Who's going to manage and maintain the new bridges?
The Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That's part of the arrangement. The bridges are so important to the Commonwealth, right up to the governor's office tracking it regularly, that we have offered to take over ownership of both bridges once they're replaced.
Yeah. I want to go back to something Chris said earlier when you were talking about getting the trucks in from New Bedford to come by ferry. That has been talked about for so long, and just doesn't seem like that is going to happen, right? I mean, it's it doesn't seem feasible, like, from a cost perspective, right?
I can't address that question of feasibility. I think what's needed is a deep conversation with the Steamship Authority on what would be best for the port communities when you look at this bridge coming. And that, again, is why I think there has to be a really strong regional planning effort, and stakeholder effort, not just to get the bridges built. You know, Paul and the Chamber have been leading a coalition to build support, get the funding. That's been very successful. But there also has to be that next step, looking at how do we make this project part of our 21st century vision of Cape Cod's future. And that's going to require a whole different conversation about, potentially getting trucks off the roadway, getting the Cape Cod RTA across the bridge, maybe getting rail across the bridge in the other direction. So, this is like a starting point and a trigger for a whole bunch of other conversations that need to be happening. Hopefully we'll start to see that through the Cape Cod Commission's review of the project, where the focus really becomes local and regional. you know, sort of addressing the project as a development of regional impact in a consistent and coherent way with all the other plans that the commission works on. I think that there's, you know, prospect for making this project work in a big way that addresses a lot of needs of a lot of different communities. But that means taking a step back away from let's get the bridges built to what are we going to do when the bridges are here. Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly a great opportunity to take a second look at some of those questions that have been asked in the past. Cost factors changed over time. We want to think of holistically the impacts of each alternative. So certainly a good time to take a deep look at some of those potential solutions for our region.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've looked at ferry service from New Bedford for at least two decades now. We've tried some pilots around there. It usually comes down to cost. And some of it is the Steamship Authority is 100% run. It raises 100% of its operating budget from fares, unlike the MBTA, which raises about 30%. So if there were a larger state subsidy, then I think some of these alternatives would be important, and alternatives to automotive transportation to the Cape are a necessary part of the future.
All right. Marianne writes, we need to replace the aged structures, but the long-term effect of also increasing traffic volume to service more visitors and ease commuter traffic will further decrease the number of families and young people living on the Cape. Housing prices will only increase as short-term rentals and second homes become even more desirable, and the only year-round residents will be wealthy retirees. What is your long-term vision for the Cape? Who wants to tackle that one?
Well, we're feeling that pressure now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an affordability issue on the Cape. The housing crisis on the Cape is real. The median price for a single-family home is $775,000
now. Crazy.
The median listing price in August was $925,000. So we have to do something because we're limited. We, you know, 86% of the land on the Cape is either protected or developed already. And we need to look at innovative programs like being able to buy deed restrictions for year-round residents and maximize the housing that we already have.
Yeah. I'm going back 2006. Remember when Peter Francis came down here?
Yes.
In 2000? He predicted all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't listen to him. Right? We should have been listening. But yeah, there's a lot going on for sure. We have about a minute or so left. Final thoughts. Louisa, and then I'll go to Chris.
Well, I think we have a lot of good things going for Cape Cod Bridges. We have strong support at the highest levels of government. We have strong public support for moving forward. And I think the fact that we're sitting around this table and all of us know each other is an indicator of the partnerships that we have that are focused on replacing the bridges. So we're confident and optimistic that we're going to get this done.
Right. And I would say, Lucy, you're really great at answering people's questions and talking to anybody who has a question. So I think that's also so helpful.
Thank you.
For people who have questions. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, just to end with really emphasizing resource protection across the Cape with so much land already developed and not much left at stake. We need to make sure that these new growth and development pressures don't consume the remaining open space we have. We need to really ensure that development is redevelopment, not new development. We need to protect the habitats and species we have. We need to do more restoration. And if there's, you know, the prospect of mitigation funds from this project to create that investment, then we need to pursue it.
Yeah. All right, Louisa Payawanski, Executive Director of MassDOT Mega Projects Delivery Office, Stephen Tupper, Deputy Director at the Cape Cod Commission, Chris Bowicki, Chair of the Executive Committee of the Sierra Club's Cape Cod and Islands Group, and Paul Nudzwicki, Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce CEO. Thank you all for being here and enlightening us this morning. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Mindy. Thanks very much.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Burdery and William Coulter.